The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan's big electric switch. Scrappage is now available on your old car when you switch to a 100% electric Nissan Leaf.
You're listening to Newstalk. It's The Hard Shoulder. I'm Mark Cagney, sitting in for Kieran Cuddy. Now, today you may have heard Andrea Gilligan taking callers earlier on Lunchtime Live about the level of littering in areas around the country. And it comes as we head into an Easter weekend when more people will be out and about. And one can assume, rather sadly, that it's going to mean a lot more littering. For more on this, we are joined by Josepha Madigan, who's the Minister of State with responsibility for special education and inclusion. Good afternoon, Minister. Thank you for talking to us on this Good Friday. You've got a new litter awareness campaign, and I'm in this business a very, very long time. If I had a tenner for every litter awareness campaign I've seen or spoken to some politician about, I could probably retire. What is going to make a difference where this one is concerned?
Well, you're probably right there, Mark. And the problem is that we don't have a national litter awareness campaign at the moment. And we did have one last year, and it was called Love This Place, Leave No Trace. And it was a very successful campaign, and basically about promoting, you know, responsible practices outside, outdoors. But we don't have one yet this year. And I think following, you know, this week's scenes, you know, with rubbish being dumped at public places, and, you know, even though we're in level 5 restrictions, it's very clear, you know, and I suppose it's only natural in brighter and warmer evenings that it's sort of enticing large gatherings of people. But sadly, there's been a really notable increase in littering, I think, throughout the country. And it's evident in our national parks and our reserves and in our rivers, our beaches and our green spaces. So I'm actually asking for a national litter awareness campaign to start up ASAP. I mean, the majority of people do make a real effort, and there's a minority, unfortunately, that don't. And what I would say to your listeners is, you know, particularly over this weekend, to try and ensure that every effort is made, you know, to keep our public places clean and, you know, to tidy up after yourselves this Easter weekend. So, and if you see a public bin that is packed with rubbish, to report that bin to your local authority as soon as possible so it can be emptied. Sometimes the local councils aren't aware of the fact there are so many overflowing bins in different areas. And I think if people think there should be more bins in an area, they should get in touch with their local representatives.
Yeah, that's problem number two, Minister, which is that we just don't have enough of them. I know every one of us who's ever gone on a continental holiday will have noted, either subconsciously or consciously, the amount of litter bins and places where you can dispose of trash. We are sadly lacking here. I mean, we're in Diggs Lane, which you know well, right? It's a long, narrow little cobblestone street. There isn't a litter bin on it. Yeah, the nearest one, I think, if memory serves me correctly, is at the back of the Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. Now, that's, what, 150 yards away. If you were in a tourist area in France or Paris or Italy or any one of those cities, there'd probably be one every 10, maybe 15 yards or 10 metres. Yeah. We're nowhere near that.
No, I wouldn't disagree with you. And I think it's not just public bins, it's also benches. There's a, you know, severe lack of benches, I think, in parks and around the place for people to take a rest and to pause and to sit down. And, you know, that's something that the local representatives in each person's, each citizen's constituency can represent those requests at a council level. I do want to thank all the local authority teams, and there's a lot of volunteer groups. I know in Limerick, for example, there's an annual cleanup today. It happens every Good Friday, you know, and they do an awful lot of good work. So there are a lot of people trying to keep our streets and our parks and, you know, and our local amenities litter free. But unfortunately, you have people as well, they're out running, they're exercising, or even going for a walk, and they're tripping over other people's rubbish that they've left behind. So I would say to families as well, and to parents in particular, to talk to their teenagers. You know, I think that can be a bit tricky because a lot of them are going out. And unfortunately, it's difficult to, so, you know, police that to a certain extent.
Well, if you had more wardens, you could probably police it a bit better, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, litter wardens as well. And that's why we need a national litter awareness campaign and to bring all those elements together.
Do you know how many we have at the moment? Sorry to cut across you, Josepha. Do you know how many wardens we actually have in the country at the moment?
I don't. No.
I don't.
And each individual...
Well, I wasn't being smart. I wasn't trying to trap you with that question.
No,
I wanted you to tell me how many there were.
I wouldn't know that. you know, I mean, Dunleary-Rathdown County Council, there are a number of wardens. But again, you know, it like Dublin will be a high density not overpopulated necessarily, but Dundrum, for example, in my constituency, would have a very high density level of people living there. And then in more, you know, rural areas, there wouldn't be as much need of a litter warden. So
when was the last time you saw a litter warden, Minister?
Pardon?
When was the last time you actually saw a litter warden?
I don't know if I've ever seen one.
Well, there you go. Neither have I. But I can tell you,
I don't know if they go incognito sometimes.
I bet you any money, if we walked outside the door now or walked around town, we'd probably spot a half a dozen traffic wardens and fellas with clampers vans and things like that. But you make more money from that, don't you?
Well, they do. You know, the local property tax, you know, that people pay, you know, goes towards these amenities and services for their particular area. But I think it's really been highlighted over the last number of weeks when people are out and around their area in a way that they wouldn't have been before, when they're rushing to and from work and they're actually observing for the first time what's happening on their doorsteps. And these lovely areas that people have to walk in, you know, and everybody's trying to get some fresh air, which they should do. But we need to all of us work together. So, you know, I think local councillors as well, I've spoken to a lot of them over the last number of weeks, and they have been saying to me as well that we need a new national litter awareness campaign. So I hope that'll be put in place very soon.
Yeah, I've always thought that we were, I know people are going to eat me for this now, but I always thought we were a dirty, scruffy race by comparison with our continental peers and brethren.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Well, no, you can't. But I mean, the one thing I will say is that, I thought that again recently because I was out on a walk, and I think and I can't walk very far at the moment because of recent events. I walked maybe 200 or 300 yards, and I saw four masks actually just dumped. Now, everybody knows that, you know, the possibility of contamination, infection and all the rest of it. We've all been warned uphill and down dale. Why anybody, anybody who actually was conscious enough of the situation to wear a mask in the first place would then just throw it off like that? I mean, it says something about our mentality and our attitude towards things like that, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, people can kind of think it's a trivial thing, but it isn't. And even, you know, people with dogs, I mean, I have a dog myself, I bring her for a walk, but I always bring a bag with me and take up the dog poo. And it's not something anybody likes doing, but, you know, it's not fair to leave it behind. And unfortunately, there are people that do that. So when you have rubbish and you have that, it's just not a very pleasant environment for anybody. So look, it is about individual responsibility as well.
Okay, well look, yeah, I suppose the more awareness, the more chance of people changing their behaviour. I want to, speaking of awareness, as you know, today is World Autism Awareness Day, and I was going to ask you, as the Minister with responsibility for special education. We've covered it on the programme, obviously, the difficulties that autistic people have in finding a job, the role that possibly government could play in that. But also I want to talk to you about two really good pieces of journalism today, which I'm sure you saw in the Examiner, and most notably Mick Clifford's piece about commuting across city for suitable children. I'll just give you the subheadline. Children with autism often have to travel long distances to a school that can provide them with an appropriate education, with many posh areas, his words and in inverted commas, having no schools that provide such classes. What did you make of that article?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm the very first minister for special education. And obviously, when I came into this role last year, I had to have a look at all of the practices that have been taking place for a number of years. And the goal ultimately is to ensure that students with special needs can get a special class place where available. So the National Council for Special Education works with families and schools to make that happen. And sometimes it's not always the local school. So a child has to travel to where an ASD class is available. And the department has a special private transport scheme for children with special needs where the state will cover the cost of a taxi to and from school. But it's far from ideal, and it's really a blunt instrument. But there are a number of different things that I'm doing to try and tackle that. So first of all, I think it's important to say that 197 new special classes have been established nationally for this year. And from September of this year, we have 1,200 additional special class places. So they are both positives. The second thing, or the third thing that I'm doing, is the National Council for Special Education has developed a five-year forecasting tool. So when we look at other provision of education for children in mainstream schools, the department uses a GIS system, so sort of a geographical information system. And, you know, there's no reason why that we can't do that for children with special needs as well. And the fourth point then is that the planning and building unit within the department, and this is a really big thing last year, that was one of the first commitments that I got from them, is that they have confirmed that all new schools from this year will automatically provide facilities for special classes. So in all new school builds, that we will have special class facilities. So that's a really big thing. But what we're dealing with at the moment, obviously, is the current cohort of children with special needs who are at school, and whether they're in primary school or whether they're in post-primary school. And my goal with this 2 billion budget that I have, which is 20% of the total education budget and a significant amount of money, I'm trying to channel that into providing a special class place for these children.
Yeah, oh, look, as you said, you're it is a new brief, and you're not going to change the world overnight. But it is interesting today, looking at that story by Mick Clifford, and then you look at the one above it by Paul Hosford, and the headline on that: Minister outraged and alarmed at autism files. Now, the minister in question is Anne Rabbitt, but the subheadline there is: the dossiers expose a contempt the state has for families with diagnosis. Now, you're now Minister with responsibility for special education and inclusion. That would be a big, big chunk of your brief, and a lot of the kind of issues in that area you would be trying to fix. But if there's a state contempt for families with diagnosis, that you're trying to push a mountain up another mountain. Because the perception is there. How do you actually turn around to the people that you're representing and whose lives you're trying to improve, and say to them, actually, this isn't the way things are.
Yeah,
this is true.
First of all, I don't believe at present, certainly anyway, that there is a state contempt. But you know, I do think that the RT report was shocking and concerning, particularly for people with additional needs and their families. And people ultimately need to be able to trust state services. So look, I know that in the Department of Education anyway, you know, we want to see full disclosure from the Department of Health. And, you know, I'll work with whoever is necessary to make that happen. And I know that Taoiseach has announced a review involving both departments. And I know that Documentary Council is undertaking a full review of all the files, certainly in our department. And I do know as well, from talking to the officials in the Department of Education, and indeed Minister Foley, that anything shared was on the specific advice and the intent of the AG, and the intent was always to find a place for a child. But, you know, and I know also there were statements by the Department of Health in the Dáil yesterday as well. But that culture piece that you talk about when we're talking about the inclusion of children with special needs is really, really critical. And it happens, you know, from our own homes and in schools, from the top down, and in wider society. And we've come a long way, you know, in decades where children with special needs were hidden away, but we still have a long way to go. I'm trying to break down those barriers. And the EPSON Act, for example.
Well, look, Minister, we would wish you all the very best with that. But the fact of the matter is that if you have a child who is suffering with these difficulties and you want to take the state, or you want that child to have its rights, you have to take on the state and its full might, its full legal might. And
what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to take the sting out of that journey. Every day I meet families with children with special needs, and I hear their stories, and a lot of them are hardship stories. It can be difficult anyway to rear a child with special needs, and not a mind trying to, as you say, try to fight a system that seems to be armed, you know, against you. So what I'm trying to do is to make that journey easier for these families, so that they can get a child, get a place for their child with special needs. And because we have now this commitment from the building and planning units that all new schools will have these facilities, I hope that this conversation we're having now won't be needed in a matter of years when we manage to get that up and running.
Okay, just very quickly before we go, what about this row between Stephen Donnelly and Simon Coveney over the mandatory quarantine? Apparently, according to the Times today, it was very, very frosty. Did they not talk to each other? Did they not? Why was it when they walked into that room in the first place, it was the first each had heard of the other's objections or problems?
Well, look, they're both representing different departments. I've been a cabinet myself. You know, you're obviously representing your own brief, whether it's Department of Health or the Department of Foreign Affairs. And then if there are issues that need to be ironed out, you'll meet in the middle somewhere and try and make compromises around it. But, you know, it is a very complicated issue, mandatory hotel quarantine, particularly around EU travellers. And I know that Leo Varadkar said that, you know, ultimately that this needs more work. Like, there are real practical, political and legal issues here.
You know Ray Whalley, Dr. Ray Whalley, who's the COVID advisor to the IMO, and he said that we're going to rue this decision, and the decision about the government having dropped the EU and US from the list. He said, and I quote, "I met a traveller this week who tested positive at day 5. Subsequently, all in the house positive, one now in hospital."
Yeah, well, as I said, the three issues that Leo Varadkar was saying, like, we need to make sure we have beds. We EU travellers have legal EU rights, so, you know, they're not easily suspended. So there's more work to do around that. And then thirdly, there's hundreds of thousands of Irish citizens living in France, living in America. You know, they may not have the money.
I understand all of that.
Available,
I mean,
to them.
Simon Coveney knew that, why didn't Stephen Donnelly not know that? And why didn't people at the top of his department say, "Oh, listen, we better check with Foreign Affairs first and see can we actually do this?"
Yeah, well, no, the two ministers will work together themselves, and then their officials will work together, and then they will all try to work together on a solution to this. That's just how it works, and I've no doubt that, you know, a solution will be found. But, you know, it's difficult. These things don't happen overnight. I mean, it started with the e-locator form, that, you know, we have the negative PCR tests. We have the staying at home for 14 days of quarantine and fines if we're in breach of that. We've now moved to mandatory quarantine for a number of different countries. And it is a criminal offence, you know, and there are fines there. And whether we can bring in the EU, I mean, the AG has got involved, as he needs to be consulted too. But there are real issues here to be dealt with.
Okay, listen, not your department and not your area really, but since we had you on, we thought we'd ask you anyway. Minister Josipa Madigan, who's the Minister of State with responsibility for special education and inclusion, thank you so much for joining us on News Talk.
Thank you, Mark.